Let's bring in Jonah Carey.
Doesn't hold up. Shocker.
Hey, Jonah.
Hey, guys.
Are you a Jurassic Park guy?
I do like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, of course, because you're a sensible person.
Meh.
Thank you. I mean, it's not my favorite movie of all time, but I definitely like it.
Yeah, some people still want to talk about it 20 years later for some reason.
Because it's the 25th anniversary. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, yeah, it's your big...
Plus,
your big
the day. Scientist says we're 5 years away from getting real dinosaurs. So, you know, okay. And before we move on, more famous wizard, Merlin or Gandalf?
It's obvious.
Wow. I mean, I guess Gandalf, because you can't... People aren't really well versed in the classics, I don't think. Yeah, I think that if you ask young people, they're going to say Gandalf. And if you ask, I'm going to say Gandalf. I don't think people read that much anymore.
Listen, it's Gandalf.
Well, I guess they read, but they read Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's well.
we threw Harry Potter into the mix,
most famous wizard. Actually, our producer Dave tried to make the case that Dumbledore, who I don't even really know who that is. Is the most famous wizard
it's from the Harry Potter,
even though the books are called Harry Potter. But anyway,
I think Dumbledore trumps Gandalf. Yeah, I'm thinking. Well, I probably go Harry Potter, Gandalf, then Lord of the Rings, and then Merlin.
Think about it. Everyone had to read The Hobbit. Like around the world, people have read The Hobbit, and then they watched the Lord of the Rings movies. Those were so big. Gandalf is huge. Like, don't overthink it. You had the right answer. Gandalf right now. Harry Potter, like a number two, Gandalf or Dumbledore, like dead last. He's not even top five most famous wizards in the Harry Potter books.
And then John Wall.
John Wall, very high as well.
Okay. Yes, well done.
So we'll talk baseball now. Thus concludes all the random crap from the show today segment.
Yeah. Let's start with this one that you threw out, talking about the trade value of some of the Blue Jays upcoming. Of course, he needs to return and prove that he's healthy and somewhere close to the guy that won the American League MVP, but Josh Donaldson, he's going to be moved if he comes back fully healthy. Don't tease us by saying that the Braves obviously could use a third baseman. That's why they trotted Jose Bautista out there for a couple of weeks. But don't tease us with this Mike Soroka thing. That sounds like a dream, Jonah.
Well, if Donaldson is at the top of his abilities, I think you have to take his trade value seriously. I mean, I go back to the Aroldis Chapman for Gleyber Torres trade. Is that an anomaly or not? Because if it isn't, it's a relief pitcher for a guy who's like now probably what? One of the most 10 untouchable players in all of baseball? I mean, like Cashman's been asked about. He said, nope. Jacob DeGrom, nope. We'd rather have Gleyber Torres. Noah Syndergaard, nope. We're good with Gleyber Torres. This is for a relief pitcher. So I don't know. I mean, unless that trade is just completely out of character and out of desperation, maybe the Cubs had 108 years and they figured, okay, fine. But, you know, if that's the nature of the beast and there really is a go-for-it mentality, then I don't know that you can throw anything out. Now, if Donaldson is – this only assumes, again, and I wrote in the article, Donaldson is fully healthy and he's hitting like an MVP. But that's a big stretch that's going to happen. That means two things have to happen. Number one, fully healthy. Number two, he has to completely shake off whatever it is that's going on right now. Those are no sure things. But if he were in that position, or let's say that Manny Machado, because he is at the top of his abilities or whatever, then I think it's right for teams to ask for that much. If the Orioles are in the market and, you know, the Braves want Machado, they should ask for somebody like Soroka. That you're getting a premium caliber guy, and you're potentially going to the World Series if you get that guy. Don't short shrift it. Go all the way.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I think it's going to be funny when Donaldson does come back, because I think Jays fans are going to cheer for him just as hard as ever in a lost season just because they want to pump that trade value up. And everyone's going to be rooting for him to do well so that he can eventually leave. The other guy, obviously, at the very front of this is Jay Happ. And Morosi also tweeting today about how it's going to be the Yankees and the Mariners in on him. It's hard for me to envision that the Mariners are going to have a prospect, considering how bare the cupboards are after so many trades. DePoto's made more deals than anyone else in the last year, that they're going to be able to be in on this. Does it kind of feel inevitable to you that he's going to be a Yankee?
Well, the Yankees certainly have more ammo. There is that. I mean, you're right. The Mariners don't really have much in the farm system. I'm trying to think of young major leaguers who fit the bill. And, you know, and I think the Dan Vogelbach ship has pretty much sailed at this point. Guys like that don't really make sense either. So, yeah, the Yankees certainly have more ammo. But that assumes there's only two teams in on Happ. Wouldn't this be pretty much any team except the Astros that are vying for the playoffs just because the Astros have more pitching than God? But other than that, any team should be interested in Happ. So I don't know that this is an either-or situation. I think the Yankees are going to have competition from whoever. It could be the Braves. It could be the Phillies. The Brewers are a good fit. The Brewers certainly need starting pitching and have young talent. I think there's a lot of clubs out there that would make sense.
We've already said you were right, and I was wrong about Roberto Osuna and the potential of trading him. And of course, there's circumstances that make the end result pretty obvious. But even looking back, if his value was high enough that you could have gotten a top level prospect, probably should have done that. I don't want to make the same mistake with Ryan Tepera. And of course, they're not on the same level in regards to performance, but he's under team control, and you know what? He strikes out more than a batter per inning, and he limits the hits. Is there any value in a Ryan Tepera? Should the Blue Jays be actively trying to shop him?
The Blue Jays should be shopping every single player on the Major League roster. Every single player. Stroman, Sanchez, Tepera, the assistant equipment manager, BJ Bird, all of them. They should all be on the table.
He's ace now. So, yeah. He's ace.
Ace. Well, I don't like that. That's not cool. Yeah, what are you messing with greatness for? That's not cool. Mm-hmm. But yes, all of them. It's a pair. I don't know what the value is going to be. We'll see. It really depends on the market. Like, if you've got only like Brad Hand and Zach Britton and, you know, one or two other relievers, that's one thing. But if you've got 100 Kirby Yateses, then Tepera is just one guy among many. So it really depends on supply and demand. But yeah, he is young. He's controllable. He's got good stuff. Strikeout per inning. He's good. You know, I see no reason not to shop him. I literally, again, every single player on the Major League roster should be shopped. There's not one guy who is an integral part of the next Blue Jays winning team. Not one guy.
But that's what's so interesting to me, though, moving forward here, is what do you make of the supply from other teams and how the Blue Jays stack up in that mix? Because, you know, I was looking at something Jim Bowden had posted on The Athletic a couple of weeks ago, and just like the different pieces that each team could be offering or could be shopping at the deadline, and it was a lengthy, lengthy, lengthy list. And when you put some of these names into that perspective, it's really hard to imagine the Jays getting anything back for the likes of the Clippards or the Axfords, or again, even the Taperas, like those relief arms. Like, it just feels like they have this one piece that's a no-brainer in Hap, and then there's a huge question mark about Donaldson. But all the other pieces that they have to shop, it feels like they have less value because of the market. Do you have the same sense, or am I overstating this?
It's possible, but you use them as sweeteners, right? Like, let's say that you're the Mariners and you are looking for pitching in general. So you say, okay, you can have Hap and you can have Tepera, and you try to get more as a concession. Maybe that means that you don't have to pay Hap salary because you're giving up Tepera. Maybe that means that your caliber prospects is going to be better. But, you know, package deals happen all the time. Teams say, all right, we're in for a penny, we're in for a pound. Let's go harder and try to get more assets. So I think that might be the way to play it. Because, yeah, in a vacuum, I don't know that John Axford has a ton of value other than the fact that he's a good dude. I think that you could go in that direction and use them as add-ons, you know, make it a two-for-two trade or something like that. I think that's certainly in play because, you know, if a team really has World Series aspirations, then presumably they need more than one pitcher, more than one player.
This is the worst season to have assets that you're trying to sell at the deadline. It feels like there's so many sellers. And I blame the Seattle Mariners for a lot of this, Jonah, I really do, because I know they've outperformed their peripherals, but it seems like they're legit and they're going to add some players, you would think. They've already taken some of the Tampa Bay Rays and it's worked out, and all of a sudden they're getting incredible performances from Wade LeBlanc, who's striking out 9 over 7 innings. I guess we can't expect that to continue. But if they were, you know, around where the Angels are, there's a lot of teams that are still back in the mix. But because there are 20 games plus over 500, all those teams that might have, you know, convinced themselves that they were into the mix in that second wild card, they're all the way out.
What if the Yankees were bad? What if also the Red Sox were bad?
Yeah, but they were never going to be bad, and the Seattle Mariners probably should be bad.
Yeah, I mean, the league is very stratified, so it creates a weird situation, right? You have so many clear sellers because so many teams are either willfully bad or just ended up being bad. I mean, teams are not trying. Like, the Tigers had no aspirations of winning this year. Neither did the Royals. Neither did the Marlins. On and on and on it goes. And so I think it's what you're dealing with. And yeah, the AL is pretty set. Like, obviously the Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, and presumably Cleveland are making the playoffs. So we're down to one spot. So how many teams are fighting for that spot? It's Seattle, it's the Angels, maybe Minnesota. You know, it's just not that many. In the National League, at least it's a little bit more open. You know, because of the unexpected emergence of the Braves and Phillies and the NL West being kind of watered down and lumped together. But, you know, it's very strange in that way. Like, if you're a buyer, how many teams can you go to for a quality relief arm? There's San Diego. There is the Reds. You can go to the Marlins. You can go to the Tigers and the Royals and Oakland probably and Texas and the Blue Jays, obviously, and Baltimore. That's a lot. So it creates a really weird trade market. We haven't really been here before where there's a bit of the NBA style stuff going on, right? It's teams that are trying to make themselves into super teams and tankers. But the difference in the NBA is you have 16 teams make the playoffs, and in MLB it's 10. So it really creates this situation where, you know, the sellers really do have to have something special. I think your point is well taken about, you know, Clippard and Axford and all those guys. And it almost becomes, you want Hap, you better make the best of it and throw in two more guys. You know, you want to give up Tyson Ross if you're San Diego. Tyson Ross can help you, but maybe it needs to be Tyson Ross and Brad Hand for the team to come with real prospects in return, just because there's so much out there. And to the point about Donaldson, going back to the original, yeah, it's Donaldson, but it's also Machado. It's also Mike Moustakas. And how many teams need a third baseman? So it's weird. You know, maybe the trade market goes different than any that we've seen in recent memory, just because the shape of the market is so remarkably different.
Yeah, I think we do tend to forget that, too, when discussing Donaldson, that it isn't just the injury, that there are those other names that you just mentioned. Did you by chance catch Will Leach's piece from about a week back? Well, whenever the Miguel Cabrera injury happened, when they were writing about his contract, and Leach essentially outlined a piece that it's not a big deal because the contract doesn't hurt them. Did you see that piece?
I did not, okay. But I disagree with him, but go ahead.
Oh, okay, no, good. No, that's perfect, because I kind of wanted you to weigh in on it, because the piece was essentially that Cabrera's contract is awful, but that they're not in a position where they're going to be spending that type of money on anybody anyways right now because they're in the rebuild. And it made me think about the Blue Jays, because they're in a bit of a similar spot with, not long-term, the same way with Russell Martin and Kendrys Morales, but I think you could make the same case with Tulo, even though you didn't get the front end of Tulo that Miguel Cabrera provided the Tigers in a Hall of Famer that you got to watch for a bunch of years be excellent. But it did get me thinking of, can we really evaluate these Blue Jays contracts the same way, where they're really hurting you, considering maybe the Jays wouldn't be spending that money or throwing that money around next year anyways if they were going younger?
Yeah, I think Leach's point, at least the way that I understand it, applies more to the Blue Jays than to Cabrera. I don't know off the top of my head, when does Cabrera's contract expire, like 2023?
Yeah, he's 42 when it,
I think
when
it's,
it expires.
Oh yeah, 41 or 42 when he's when it.
Okay,
expires.
So you're telling me that the Tigers are not going to have no desire to spend money for the next half a decade? That's aggressive. I mean, that's you know, that implies that the rebuild is going to take forever, and that's a tough one. But yeah, no, I think the point is right on about the Blue Jays. It does. You shouldn't even be making roster decisions based on salaries. If Dan Jansen is the best. If Jansen's the best player on the roster, then Jansen is your catcher. It makes no difference what Russ Martin is making. If Tulo can't answer the bell, it makes no difference what he's making. You just play the best guys out there and you see what happens. And yeah, it won't really shackle you. I think if anything, it's in a weird way sort of an asset, because these half measures that the Jays have been taking, especially coming into this season, they did not strip it down. I mean, I've been stomping up and down for them to trade Donaldson for a while now. Now we're pretty late in the game. Like, let's get on with it. Again, nobody should be untouchable. Like, yeah, Justin Smoke is a nice little asset. Okay, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. If you want to compete in a world of super teams, you cannot sort of rebuild. You cannot try to make things work. Of course, the thing that we talked about when I was in the studio not long ago is that if you do that, how much patience are Jays fans going to have for Teoscar Hernandez being by far your best player? I mean, that's the only thing. If there were no considerations in terms of attendance and in terms of fan interest, you would strip it to the ground and go salt the earth and do it that way. So that's really what it's going to come down to. I think the Jays' biggest challenge right now is a marketing one, because clearly the best thing to do is to trade anybody not shackled to the floor, and then you have to convince the fans that that's okay. I think fans are savvier than they used to be, and that they understand that winning 78 games every year stinks and gets you nowhere. So you have to start playing up that message so you don't have 0.0 local TV ratings like the Houston Astros once did. I think if you can do that, then you can make the case for being aggressive, because they have to, because they're never going to catch the Astros and the Yankees or whoever's good in 3 years if they kind of say, all right, we'll hang on to this guy and get rid of this guy and whatever. You can't do it halfway.
Okay, so I have a question about timelines then. If they do what you suggest that they should and just totally strip it bare and lose 100-plus games next year and maybe the year after that, and maybe the year after that, and maybe it's a five-year rebuild, because I think we all think that Vlad Jr. is going to be on.
Years.
Yeah, that's the thing. If Vlad Jr. is going to be on this team next year and you only have him for 6 years, that leaves you with what, like 1 or 2 years where Vlad is a part of this team in its upward trend and ready to compete for championships? Aren't you kind of screwed because you have this potentially generational talent who's going to be, the clock is ticking, not this year. We all understand he's not going to be in the majors, especially now after the injury that's knocking him out for a month. But next year, the clock is going to start to tick, and that you can't go in a five-year rebuild when a guy's only got 6 years of team control.
Yeah, but you don't need to trade for guys who are in low A ball. That's the thing. You could trade for prospects that are a little bit more advanced, and you could do it that way. And I would add that the point of Vlad Jr. is exactly what backs up the point of the timeline, that you have guys who are coming in and making an impact at 19 and 20, that because of, you know, perfect game and traveling tournaments and teams that are very polished, prospects are coming up to the big leagues and they're being impactful more than ever before. You have so many 20-year-olds who are good right now. Juan Soto is 19. He's lighting it up. All these guys are really good. So if you can trade for prospects who are, you know, at least have some seasoning, then you could be in a position where, yes, you are stripping it bare, and next year would certainly be ugly. Maybe the next year after that, they would only lose 87 games, though, in the year after that, they'd be ready to contend, and Vlad Jr. would be 22, and he would be more polished than he was before, and now you have a four-year run with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think that is the perfect storm. That's what you want to get to, that it is a strip-to-the-ground rebuild, but that maybe a strip-to-the-ground rebuild doesn't take as long as it used to when guys had to come up, and they had to prove themselves, and then you send them down, and then you wait. I don't know that you need to do that anymore. I think that when Jansen comes up, he's going to hit right away. I think Bichette's going to hit right away. I think Guerrero's going to hit right away. And if you craft the deals that you make in the near future and you draft well or whatever, I think those guys are going to come up and make an impact pretty quick too.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I can't understand people that would listen to exactly what you just said and not agree with that. Like, I don't understand what the perspective would be that's against it, or that you wouldn't believe any of those things. So we'll get you to weigh in on this as well. I won't tell you which side each of us was in on, but Ben and I were discussing last night about, so it was posted. I can't remember who I'm supposed to give this credit for, but they just pointed it out that Mike Trout went 13 of 19 in his last six games. He had four home runs, seven walks, a double, and eight runs scored, which is just like eye-popping numbers. And I know, again, it's a tiny, tiny little sample size, but the Angels went 1-5 over that span. And really, there's no other sport where a best player can be that dominant over a stretch of games like that and post that record. And I wonder if you think that that's a good thing for baseball or a bad thing for baseball.
I've never thought about that question in those terms, because that just is baseball. Like, it's just that sort of, you know, the way that I've always been posed that question or thought about that question is, don't blame the best guy. Like, that's a conversation that gets had a lot. A-Rod used to get a lot of that with Texas when he was hitting 54 home runs or whatever. I don't know. It's a weird parallel universe. Like, baseball just isn't basketball. I guess I've sort of come to terms with it a long time ago. I don't like when people get vilified, when players get vilified for not carrying their club or whatever. Mike Trout didn't do anything wrong. Mike Trout has been the best player in baseball every day since opening day 2012. So, what is it? 1, 2, 3. Should have 7 MVPs by now. Yeah, so 6 MVPs by now, I guess. So I'm okay with this. I think that that's fine with baseball, and I think that you could turn this around too. Like, the reason that baseball can be so compelling in the postseason, in particular, is because it doesn't rest on one guy. Like, I like that. You know, it was fun in the NBA Finals when Kevin Durant took over the game and whatever. But there's something about Mark Lemke winning the World Series for you. You know what I mean? That's pretty cool. Yeah. And you really don't see that in basketball. Like, Iguodala had that year where he was Finals MVP. Okay, he wasn't the best player on the team. But still, like, Iguodala is not Mark Lemke. Baseball, it can be left up to anybody. Anybody can wear the goat horns, and anybody can be the guy who comes through. So, I don't know. I think that's sort of fun. There's a little bit of March Madness in it that way with baseball, because it's, you don't know that in that direction. So I guess I don't like the fact that Trout can take the rap for it, but I like the fact that it is very much, you know, it's an individual game in the sense that it's batter versus pitcher, but it is a team game in the sense that it really takes 25 to win the World Series. If you have a top-heavy roster, which the Angels have had every year that Trout's been there, it's Trout and Pujols, who's not good anymore, and a couple other guys, you're just not going to win.
The only thing is, does Trout take that heat anymore? Because, like, we never have that conversation, and I don't like...
Well, come MVP voting time, there's still some dinosaurs, yes, who talk about
but
MVP.
But that's being phased out a little bit more, wouldn't you say?
I would hope so. But, yeah, like because, Jonah says, he should have a couple more MVPs.
But we were talking about this last week, Ben, where I was saying no one looks at Barry Bonds and says, well, he didn't win, so he's a loser. He's not that... Like, it's steroids. It's the beginning and end of the, of the Barry Bonds debate. It has nothing to do with him not winning a championship. No one brings that up, and nor should you.
No, you're an idiot if you think that Mike Trout is in some way responsible for the Angels' lack of playoff success. The one thing I would say that, I mean, so yes, from a positive perspective, it's good, because you don't necessarily need a transcendent superstar to win a World Series or can be competitive for one like you do in the NBA. You have to have a star if you want to win a championship. But yeah, the league, it's not great because we don't get to see Mike Trout in the playoffs, and their best star is just kind of relegated to you know, the hardcore fans of the sport. And when it's the Cubs and it's the Astros and it's whatever, the Yankees and the Red Sox in the postseason, those guys get to get grander in scale, and Mike Trout, who's had this incredible season, we just kind of forget about him. That's the negative aspect of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Angels want to fix it, maybe they should have an owner who's not a union-busting SOB who has no idea what he's doing and takes over and signs Albert Pujols and wastes all their money and overshadows their front office and completely ruins Mike Trout's career. How about that?
Yeah, how about that? All right, last one before we let you go. Jeff Blair wrote about that, you know, it's time to trade draft picks in Major League Baseball, that we should be doing that. Of course we should. Like, is there any argument against that now?
No, I love it. And I think that's a way, too, if you want to try to goose things, if you're the Angels or whoever, it makes things more interesting, and it spices up the trade deadline too, because again, we've got 15 sellers this year and a whole bunch of Jay Haps and Brad Hands. Okay, how about if I offer the number one pick? Well, that certainly would be interesting. No, it'd be great. I'm all for it.
Thank you, Jonah.
Thanks, fellas.